It's a little bit after 4 p.m. here on KDNK. I'm Will with the Soper Sun. With me in the studio is Megan Tackett, also of the Sun.
Hello, hello.
And Kevin Shoresman of the town of Carbondale.
Hello.
And hopefully on the radio is Scott Fitzwilliams of White River National Forest.
Hi.
Awesome. We got. I'm always a little nervous with those call-in folks, so I appreciate you making the time, both Kevin and Scott. This is a little half hour news show we do on KDNK called Everything Under the Sun, talking about what's in this week's paper. Some of the obvious big things folks are talking about, fire, you know, Lake Christine kind of wrapping up, looking better. But we got the Cache Creek fire, we have the Cabin Lake fire, and we got plenty of smoke from other fires, reminding us every day that this is the arid west. So Scott, how's it going out there?
Well, we're busy. It's been a long summer already, and very unique and different for the White River to have. You know, our first big fire started in Summit County in June 7th, I believe, and that was earlier than normal for that part of the world. And we have been really busy ever since with some smaller fires, some medium fires, and now the last. Three are getting to be large fires. Lake Christine, as you said, is doing pretty well. We're over 90% contained, and things are going well. We are in a position where it's going to continue to burn within the interior of that fire perimeter, but we're pretty confident it's not going anywhere. But then Sunday we had two more fires start, and they're going in the opposite direction. They're growing considerably. The Cache Creek fire southwest of Rifle, and then the Cabin Lake fire up in the Meeker area, up in the White River drainage. So it's got us busy. And then, you know, there's fires on the BLM private land in northwest Wyoming, and then we're actually a lot of the smoke and stuff. I was talking to the incident meteorologist, and that's coming from California and Oregon. So we have a high layer of smoke coming from the West Coast, and then our localized fires, and then the fires in the around the state. So it's been a tough year.
Yeah, it seems like it. What can you tell us about Cache Creek and Cabin Lake? I understand that Cache Creek's up over 1,000 acres, and it sounds like it's kind of is it in PJ? I'm not super familiar with that area.
Yeah, it's up by the battlements there. Above Parachute, just above Parachute in those battlement mountains. This morning it was 1,342 acres. It's growing today, so it'll be considerably bigger than that before the end of the day because it's burning pretty good right now. I just drove by it. It's burning in some really rough country, spruce fir, some aspen, but a lot of dead down material, so it's not a fire that we're going to be able to directly suppress. It's more just trying to get some perimeter control, keep it away from things we don't want to burn. But it's one of those fires that just the geographic terrain, the fuels that it's in, it's going to be burning a while, similar to what we told people early on from Lake Christine, that this is not one that's going away quickly. Mm-hmm. It's just in that kind of country. So the fortunate part is it's not real close to, there's a couple residences. We have a lot of oil and gas facilities on BLM and private land in the forest there. But right now, not threatening any of them, and firefighters are working hard.
Yeah, sounds like it. Any idea on cause, or is it too late or early to tell?
No, that one was lightning. We're listing that as lightning, and we had that. You know, the Saturday, the benefit of the storms that came through was we got between a half and a third of an inch of rain at Lake Christine. However, it came with a lot of lightning. Mm-hmm. We looked at the lightning maps, and we knew we were going to be busy Sunday and Monday.
It's double-edged sword, it sounds like, and then you have the risk of floods and other concerns on the existing burns, right?
Yeah, it is. It's not over when it's over, and fortunately, you know, we haven't received a massive one of those cell downpours that we often get around here and have slides when things are good. So maybe we'll get lucky and just have small storms before the big ones come and those areas that are those burns cars won't slide.
That would be great to see. Cabin Lake, what's the word on that? It seemed like it was a little smaller than Cache Creek the last time I checked, but perhaps that's changed.
Yeah, well, I was just up there this morning, got a good look at it, and it's, you know, again, this morning's number was 958 acres. It's growing. It'll be well over 1,000 acres today. You know, the structures in the Seven Lakes Lodge area, we feel really confident. We've got them pretty protected. So that's our first priority after keeping some firefighters and the public safe is structures. But again, it's in you know, heavy fuels and, you know, pretty rough country. With the resources we have, it's more steering the fire in the direction that we think is more acceptable right now and looking for, although it doesn't look good, for some sort of change in the weather.
Mm-hmm. Buford Newcastle Road is closed. Any other closures people should be aware of associated with either of those fires?
Yeah, Buford Newcastle both ways, which is probably the most important thing as far as the fire. We still have we have area closures on all three of the fires: Lake Christine, Cabin Lake, Cache Creek. Pretty large areas around mm-hmm. the fire. So basically, the message for folks is stay away. we have got to make sure firefighters can work safely, and so far people have been great. I mean, people got out of the areas quickly. The Cache Creek area we're not worried about because other than hunting season, no one goes up there very often. There's no trails, and so but of course the Buford Newcastle Road is very popular. So that's we feel bad about that. It's an inconvenience to campers and people who want to go fishing and families. But right now, the highest priority is the safety and being able to get firefighters in and out of there.
Sure. As far as you didn't mention on Cabin Lake if there's a cause there.
No, it's unknown at this time. It was lightning in the area, but we have investigators out there just to confirm that. So once we get that done, we'll make an announcement on what the actual cause is.
Okay, makes sense. Anything you want to tell people just about caution? I mean, even if neither of these are human caused, there's always the potential for a human caused fire, as Lake Christine illustrates.
Yeah, it is just, I don't have to tell people how dry it is, but we're setting all-time records on some of our monitoring stations for energy release components and all these other factors and these low humidities. It's volatile out there right now, and people have been fantastic. The numbers of human-caused fires this year have been considerably less than what a quote-unquote normal, what the average is over the years. But we can't take our eye off the ball, whether it's, you know, cigarettes, whether it's, you know, being careful with any equipment you're using. I the other day I flagged someone down going down the highway because they didn't know it. They had a chain dragging, and it was throwing out sparks along the highway. And it's things like that extra diligence right now, because it doesn't mm-hmm. take much. All you have to do is look around, and those fine fuels, as we call them, the grasses, are just, that they have no moisture in them, mm-hmm. zero. And so with these conditions, and unfortunately, you know, we've got a little chance for some rain and thunderstorms tomorrow, and then we go right back to the same stuff and of high pressure with high temperatures and no moisture.
Yeah, the chain dragging is an interesting one. Megan, I don't know, you're kind of got the inside skinny on some fire things now and again. Did you hear about the transmission that dropped out of the truck on 82 and caused some fire?
I didn't hear about that. Yes, I did hear about that one. I was like, oh, actually caused fire, yes.
Yeah, and apparently some citizens were real quick to, telling me this.
Yeah,
and
very
they neglect
quick.
And they neglected to get a photo for the paper, which I told them they're bad deputy reporters.
Well, that's what if there's a silver lining to all this, is you do have all of these, you know, activated citizens that are just, you know, they're on it. They want to make sure. If you follow even online the Roaring Fork SWAT pages and stuff, I can't count. I've lost count how many posts there are of people shaming somebody and telling tales of, hey, there was a stoplight and I got out and I had to talk to them because they didn't realize XYZ and mm-hmm. it's a fire danger. So silver linings, I suppose.
I suppose. Scott, you're welcome to stick around on the air if you like. I think we've got a smooth transition into Kevin here, because closely related to the amount of moisture we have out there is water restrictions starting here in Carbondale.
Yeah, you know, Scott did mention a lot of the things that have been making the firefighting difficult are the same things that are making water availability difficult. You know, we've been closely monitoring our water usage in town, and we had been staying at around 1.8, 1.9 million gallons a day. And then the weekend before Mountain Fair, all of our plants were on, for the most part, 24 hours a day trying to keep up with the demand. And when you're thinking about supplying water for firefighting, if mm-hmm. we have a fire in town, and just for domestic human consumptive use, that gets concerning to us when we have both of our plants running at full capacity, because what happens if there's an issue with one of them?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what drove us to make the decision to go ahead and implement the water restrictions. And for those who don't know, the water restrictions are odd, even day restrictions. If your house ends in an even number, you water on an even day.
And odd. Zero is even. I like that you had to specify that. But just
that's the engineer nerd in me.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's one of my SAT factoids I like to drop in class. You know.
And you know, the other thing is it's really helpful for our water production from the municipal supply side. For people to stay away from that 10 to 3, not only is it probably the least efficient time to water, it also helps us kind of have two periods during the day, nighttime and that time, where there's low water usage so we can kind of catch up. So, you know, on top of that, stay away from as much outdoor water use as you can. Don't wash your patios. Don't wash your driveways because there's a little dust on them. If you're going to wash your car, use a bucket. Don't leave the hose running while you're doing it. Have a nozzle on it. Quick rinses, that sort of thing. We also do recognize that there are large systems, some of them operated by the town, some the school district, and, you know, RVR, that just couldn't handle an every other day. So in those systems, what we've agreed to do is to reduce the amount of water by 50%. So you may see systems running daily, but they're only running half the amount that they normally would.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if this isn't abided by, or if we run out entirely, we stop outdoor irrigation altogether, right?
That's basically the next step in this. If we get to that point, and I don't want to scare people, but I don't want people to think that this is just going to be okay the rest of the year. If the conditions continue, the board may very well declare a water crisis, which means an end to outdoor watering.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, water rationing is something I've seen before in Carbondale. Is it usual to have it this early in the season, or is that something you'd expect to be implementing in September or October?
It would typically be more the September, October timeframes. Those are typically the driest months when you think about river flows, not maybe precipitation, but river flows. And we're seeing levels now that we haven't typically seen. Like in 2012, the river levels got to this point in September. So
yeah,
that's part of the reason we're also not just implementing these restrictions on potable systems. It's also the ditch system as well, mm-hmm. because there is a very good chance that unless something changes, we're going to end up having legs of the ditches we may have to turn off because there's just not enough water.
That makes sense. Scott, it sounds like you're still on the line since I don't hear a dial tone. How's the water level helping with, how are you guys keeping up? I know that you were pulling out of Lake Christine, pulling out of the reservoir up there. Are you finding enough water to hit these fireworks with?
We are. It's been a little more work than is normal, for sure. And we've had to, you know, count on some people's, you know, private supplies and pay them for their water for the fire suppression. The other fires, Cache Creek and Cabin Lake, fortunately there's some decent water supplies close by, and we're able to use that. In one case, it's Colorado Parks and Wildlife has some reservoirs that they've given us permission to use, and some private landowners. So people are stepping up and offering it when we need it. Our lakes and streams, or our rivers and streams, are very low flows right now, which of course stresses fish and aquatic and plants and animals. But you know, drought is part of their life too, so they'll survive. We'll hopefully, you know, this won't go multiple years, but it's been a challenge. The amount of water that is normally out on the forest and, you know, smaller streams and tributaries is actually, some of it dried up early. And, you know, areas where we had streams that usually flow well into the summer have dried up pretty quick in the spring due to the low snowpack. But mm-hmm. We're getting by.
I'm glad to hear that. And just a reminder that there are some not mandatory but highly suggested bans on fishing during the heat of the afternoon on the Lower Crystal, the Lower Roaring Fork, the Colorado River, just to give those fish a chance to deal when it's real hot out. I'm not stressing them out
because
we're trying to weather this situation with as much little harm to both the environment and the people as possible. So,
yep.
Scott, Kevin, you guys are welcome to stick around. Welcome to head out if you guys are busy. This is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, commercial free since 1983. Underwriting on KDNK is an effective way to market your business, reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with KDNK's reasonable underwriting packages, including Mountain Fair live broadcast underwriting. I'm thinking that one might need to go away because it's a long way to Mountain Fair at this point. Email Greg at KDNK.org. Support comes from Mary's Main Street Spirits in Carbondale. Open this first Friday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. for tastings, and I've lost it. Let's see if I can find it again. All right.
Have me at tastings on those kinds of readings. There we go.
Yeah. From Marble Distilling Products, including Marble Vodka, Ginger Cello, and Moonlight Espresso. Convenient shopping for the spirits of Carbondale. So this is Everything Under the Sun. We got about 10 minutes left here to chat about everything else in the paper besides those two things. Megan, you have the open, both the Powers Arts Center and the Guest House. So tell us about those things.
I always like to keep notes when I can, you know?
The whole paper is your notes, apparently.
Exactly. The whole paper. That's all I need. First off, I have to thank you because you actually have also covered this when they first opened back in the before four time with another entity that shall not be named. And then I was able to go and visit the Powers Arts Center as they celebrated their 5th year anniversary. So I really appreciated going on that mission because I didn't even know that this beautiful museum that's like 2 miles away from here off of 82 even existed. I just loved that when Google Maps first told me, oh, turn left here, I'm thinking, Google, why are you lying to me? This is a private drive. And then you get up to this just beautiful, I mean, what would you say, a third of a mile, a half a mile off the highway? It's not far at all. And then you just have this, you're just met with this instant serenity, right? I loved pulling up and getting out of my car and I'm staring at this, you know, very much a Japanese architecture, kind of not just inspired, it is Japanese architecture, two-story museum complete with, you know, a reflection pool lined with black granite and these concrete frames that literally frame the view of Mount Soperus. And for those who are familiar with the museum know exactly what I'm talking about, but for those who don't, it doesn't feel, it's like, Toto, we're not in Carbondale anymore. And then you walk inside. And of course, you know, Melissa English was who's the director of the museum, is just standing at the entryway. And she didn't know, I mean, we had discussed me coming, but she didn't know who I was yet in person. And she was just so happy to greet anyone who came in. And it's astounding to think that, you know, the first floor gallery is nothing but Andy Warhol's, for instance. And not just you know, Andy Warhols, quote unquote. You know, I've stumbled into galleries before in San Francisco where you're like, oh yeah, there's some Salvador Dalí's in the back, and you go and you're like, yeah, it's technically Dalí, but is it really? Right?
You're
like,
such a snob, Megan.
Such a snob. But that speaks volumes for my endorsement of this place, because you walk into, you know, that gallery, and admittedly, you know, Melissa told me that in celebration of the 5 year, she really did go back to the original John and Kakima Powers collection, which of course is the sole source for all of the exhibits that rotate annually at mm-hmm. this museum on donation base, because John Powers is for whom that museum exists. Mm-hmm. He passed away in 1999, and he was this avid art collector who was fortunate enough to retire in his 40s and really dedicated the latter part of his life to just building up his collection, and was personal friends with Andy Warhol, for instance. And so when you walk in, you know, I'm thinking, I'm told, okay, there are Andy Warhols there, great. And then I realize, no, there's a portrait of John Powers that Andy Warhol did of him. That's a little bit different, mm-hmm. right? But they were friends. And so you walk into this gallery and, you know, it's not just the abstract you've never heard of. No, the Marilyn Monroes are there. The Mao's are there. The Jackies are there. The Campbell Soups are there. I mean, everything that you would expect or want to see out of a Warhol exhibit is there. And I personally, I don't know what this says about me, but I loved the juxtaposition of, you know, the trademark bright colors that Warhol's known for with kind of the darker subject matter that Melissa chose to highlight. You know, of course, you've got Marilyn, and she had a darker demon simmering there. Jackie is not on her best day. And there was one that I hadn't seen before, and of course the Mao's, but one I hadn't seen before was the Electric Chair series, and there were two from that series that it was haunting. So it just gives you a moment of pause, and you just get to consider the weight of everything. And it's, again, right here in Carbondale.
Right.
Who knew?
You know, my first experience there, walking in, and they didn't have as much Warhol. It was very focused on Jasper Johns when they first opened, which was kind of the goal there. But, you know, the prominence of the artist and the number and diversity of the exhibits, you know, the Denver Art Museum would be proud to have a show like that.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I loved doing was touring the museum with Melissa, because the upstairs, the second floor, is still completely dedicated to Jasper Johns. And at current, it's 1960 to 1999. Mm-hmm. And it was so great to see just her own talent as a curator, the way that every room brought you through different decades, and she paid special attention to her groupings and series. But, you know, his whole shtick sort of was, okay, here's this image, and I'm going to fixate on this, and I'm going to do something to it, and then I'm going to do something else to it, and then something else to it for decades. And so it was neat to be able to go from room to room and see the evolution of how he incorporated all of these facets. But what was more fun was hearing Melissa talk about it. And, you know, you're talking about the other museums being proud to have this, you know, she just lit up because she was just at the Broad in LA, where the Powers Art Center had loaned a few smaller Jasper Johns pieces for their exhibit. And she had seen a couple bigger canvases in person that she had only seen, you know, paper multiples of in her own establishment, as it were. And it was just a totally different experience. And she kept talking about how she just sees, every time she looks at it from a different angle, she just sees something new. And there's just new depths to that work. And, you know, just talking about how all the schools will bring in, you know, their art students on field trips, and just the fact that we have this resource center that's, you know, very, very, it's just kind of hidden, but not. It's hidden in plain sight.
It's hidden in plain sight. It's hours, you know, it's 10 to 3 weekdays? Or it might
10
be
to 3 on weekdays, yeah. And a completely free admission. Because, mm-hmm. again, it's all donated.
Yep, yep. So very, very, very cool resource to have. Little segue, First Friday happening this week.
Yes.
Kind of a toned down one, and it's the Post Mountain Fair. But there, you know, the chamber has several things going on. The Clay Center has an opening. I believe Carbondale Arts is waiting until next Thursday to do their next thing. They might
yeah,
be a
little
bit
tired. They're
timing that
with Our Town One Table, I think, is the thinking.
I think Our Town One Table is still 3 weeks out.
Oh, right.
Like the 17th. By the way, Our Town One Table coming up. Thanks for that reminder. That's that's something that's worth getting your email into the town to reserve a table. Big, gigantic potluck, I guess is the best way to put that, townwide. Kevin, have you had a chance to participate in that?
I did not participate last year, but I helped a little bit with the preparation and then heard some stories like the bear in the tree.
There was that. Yeah, that was the drama of last year. Well, we got just a couple minutes left here. So we'll do the kind of lightning round. Megan, tell us about your other story for this week.
Lightning round. Okay, the guest house is on 13 Moons Ranch up toward Crystal Valley before you actually get into Crystal Valley. It is so cool. There's a treehouse, so they had me at treehouse. But Seth O'Donovan is kind of the proprietor mastermind behind the guest house. She is very much in her first stage of three, hoping to recognize full concept by 2020, but that doesn't mean that you have to wait till then to utilize that gorgeous space or get to know her and her philosophy about connecting to the land, having fully immersive experiences. You know, I personally wish I had known about that for my wedding venue. It was gorgeous. You had chickens and a gaggle of kittens when we were there for the she lift
kind of
retreat.
The kittens, yeah.
They were really cute kittens. So yeah, I hope you check out that story, and I hope that we can maybe chat with her at a future date, because it's a really, really cool concept. She's got an amazing background. And again, I can't believe that we have these things in Carbondale's backyard.
And, you know, speaking of backyards, we got the new teacher housing development there. 20 new units, all full of Roaring Fork School District employees. I say teachers, but that also goes for, you know, support staff. You know, your secretaries and your custodians need a place to live, too. So that is completely spoken for, and move-in is starting this week. Did a little story on that. Also did a story on Mary Lilly, who was a philanthropist extraordinaire after her passing, with a legacy gift to multiple local organizations, including the Soper Sun and KD&K. Talked a little bit about both how you can support organizations with money that you kind of need until you're not here. You know, not everybody has the means to give much away while they're around, but they might have something they can use that can be really useful to a small organization for stability, for a special project, or just for enhancing what they do after the fact. So, and we caught up with a couple of folks who have also set up some legacy gifts. Most of those are kind of hard to get a hold of in advance, because you don't generally reveal that until you're gone. But the Third Street Center has a special program where they sort of go on the record, and that helps offset some of the loans that the building has in place. So kind of a cool program. Related to our fire talk, had a chance last Friday to tour, or actually last Saturday, to tour the Lake Christine burn site close to the lake itself, and was really pleased to see some plants. And I think that we just lost Scott at that very moment. Okay. To tour the burn itself and see some plants and stuff coming back. So it's not all bad news. And that's we as a paper really like to cover the good news. And so the fire season has been a little rough that way. But there's nuggets of people coming together and all of that in between. Okay, Kevin, anything you'd like to add?
Just one quick thing, actually, too. If you're not watering your lawn from 10 to 3, that museum sounds amazing. And then you mentioned First Friday. We will be having a booth at First Friday to talk a little more waste discussions with the community. So
great.
If folks are down there, stop by.
Perfect.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. That's all the time we have. We're heading into the inner game, I think, next. Thanks for listening. And thanks, Scott, for joining us, and Kevin and Megan.
Happy Friday.
And have a good day.